Who is this Jesus? And how do we know that he's the one who has come to save and to make all things right? What is it about him that clues us in to the fact that he is the answer to all of the heart's desires? God reveals to us Jesus and who he is by showing us what he will do and what he does. This is why Jesus receives the three titles that you see before you: priest, prophet, and king. These are the three sort of trademark secrets, right? The three signposts that show us that Jesus really is the Messiah. Jesus really is the anointed one. So you well know that as of last week, right, we're spending the last 3 weeks of this liturgical year diving in a little bit to God's titles, what they meant in his life and what they mean for us in our lives. Last week we talked about Jesus who is the high priest, Jesus who is the priest of all priests. This was one of the ways in which God distinguished his Messiah. That as priest, it was his job to offer sacrifice, right? It was his job in a broken world to take what was divided, divinity and humanity, and to reunite them, to bring them together again. And we know that in a broken world, when that priest offers sacrifice, that bringing together again is called reconciliation. It's the thing that brings, that restores friendship, right? The friendship that we had with God in the beginning, that all mankind and Adam and Eve had with God, that friendship that was broken, the reconciliation, the bringing back again face to face. We know that this is what that word means, to be face to face again, to be reconciled. So this was one of the marks of Jesus the Messiah. But he wasn't just priest of priests. He wasn't just high priest. He was also the prophet of all prophets. Again, you and I need to take a look at what is going on in the world of Jesus in order for us to know why it is that he would be recognized in this way. God came to save his people, not simply by bringing priests along the way to offer sacrifice, to be the ones who stood in the breach. He also brought anointed prophets. So if the job of the priest was to offer sacrifice in order to reunite God and man, what was the job of the prophet? The job of the prophet was to speak divine truth. This is how we know that a prophet was who he says he was, that he revealed what God spoke to his heart, to his whole people. Why? So that his people would be saved. There's a real common thread to all the prophets in the Old Testament. It was a thread that continued in the life of Jesus. It was a thread that has continued in the life of the church since the time of Jesus to the present day. And it's this: every prophet is hated. Nobody likes a prophet. That was a common thread. Was there any prophet that you read about in the Old Testament that had a fun time? Man, none of them. No prophet had a fun time. No prophet ever seemed to be very well accepted. But a prophet, nonetheless, spoke the truth of God to a world gone wrong. Why does the world reject the divine truth? The very truth that was spoken in order to save them. Well, because in speaking the truth to a world gone wrong, what a prophet needed to do was to challenge the false worship of God's people. You see, God created us for life of communion. Jesus comes into your life and into my life because he wants friendship with us. And what that looks like for us is this word called worship. Worship means the giving over of my whole life to God, right? The giving over of all things, the leaving nothing back, the leaving nothing besides, the nothing behind, that I submit all of me to God's providence and to God's love. But what happens in a broken world is that we begin to take that worship of God and we begin to replace it with other things. So the prophet comes along to say, stop worshiping the other things. I challenge you in all of these ways of wrong worship. And I ask you, the God of the universe asks you, return, repent, right? Repent to right worship. Why does anything ever go wrong with Israel? Ever? The one reason When something goes wrong with God's people, why does it go wrong? Well, because they stopped worshiping God. That's why it went wrong. When they went over to the worship of the gods of their neighbors, or when they worshiped the god of wealth or of power or whatever, that's when everything went wrong. So God sends the prophets to redeem his people. G.K. Chesterton would say it this way. He was one of these really great, very witty Catholic writers. He lived in the late 19th century, early 20th century. He's been called like the king of paradox. He was known for wording the truth in such a way as to catch our attention. And he would say this. He said, if you're watching a play, if you're watching a scene in a theater play, and you want to be the one who sees it best, stand upside down. He said, if you want to see the action before you in the theater, if you want to see that best, if you want to see that better than anybody else in the theater, stand upside down. And he says, in his kind of own prose, he says, because when you do this, you actually see reality in a way that nobody else sees it. And G.K. Chesterton would go on to describe how this was not simply true of the ordinary things of the world, but this is also true of the Christian life. He says, the prophet is the only one who can actually see the truth of reality because the prophet stands on his head. The only ones who see the world as it is are the ones who stand upside down. And they look like madmen because nobody stands upside down. But what's he really getting at? You see, Chesterton knew the same reality that all Christians know, which is that in a world broken by sin, everything has been turned on its head. The whole world is turned upside down. And so if you and I look at reality, we're all looking at the same thing, but in order for us to see rightly, we actually have to see according to the way the world really is. So for us to stand on our head is actually to see the world right side up. This is the voice of the prophet, to challenge the fact that the world is off kilter, right? It's skewed. For us to speak the truth, for Jesus to speak the truth, was to speak to that reality. And here's what really drives home that point. Why was it that Jesus, what actually caused the death of Jesus? What was the immediate cause of his crucifixion? He wasn't crucified for being a priest. I mean, the priest is the one who reconciles. The priest is the one who offers forgiveness, right? The priest is the one who speaks words of life into what is dead. Like, we love that part. We want that. That's good. That's easy. That feels great. Jesus was not crucified for being a king. Matter of fact, they wanted to make him one. Jesus was crucified because he was being a prophet, because he was speaking the truth to a world that did not want to hear the truth. And so they silenced him. To be a prophet is to be extremely unpopular, we'll say. It's why all the martyrs in all the history of the church were martyred, because they were prophets, because they spoke the truth. You and I, as Christians, have been anointed into the priesthood, the role of prophet, and the role of king of Jesus. We are made partakers in that. And so for you and I to exercise that authority, to exercise that office, is probably the most courageous of things that we do as Christians. Because if you and I decide that we want to be a prophet, we're not going to be very well liked, because we live in a world that's upside down. And so ain't it obvious that when the church speaks the truth, the church is maligned for that truth. The church is put off to the side. Right, the truths of God which have long since been rejected. But I tell you what, why does Jesus speak that truth? Why does Jesus say things that we don't want to hear? Because he wants to save us. He wants you to have life. I'm convinced that in my own life, one of the reasons that I didn't end up really, really wayward was because my mom and dad were really good prophets. My mom and dad really knew how to speak the truth to me and to my siblings, particularly when we didn't want to hear it. You know, when I was a kid, I actually didn't know how much courage that takes. You know, I just thought, you know, like when you get in trouble, this was the worst thing in my house. When you got in trouble, when you really got in trouble, you got the talk. That was the worst punishment of any punishment, was the talk from mom and dad. Because you knew what was coming. It was horrible. And normally, whenever we needed to have the talk, it wasn't just one of us. It was probably two of us or maybe all three of us. We all got the talk. You know, mom would say, wait till your dad gets home. It's like the words of death. Dad would come home. Mom and dad would kind of have this silent conversation. We knew what was going on, and we would never have the talk. It was always after dinner. That's when we would have the talk. After we cleaned the kitchen, did the dishes. That was one of our chores as children. And then we would all be kind of just in this waiting pattern over in the family room, pretending like we were playing, but knowing that we weren't really going to be able to have fun doing that because my mom and dad were across the house in the workroom. And there was this sliding door that they could slide open and slide closed. And so eventually they would slide that door open and they'd look out and they'd say, Brian, we'd like to have a talk with you. So your shoulders like slumped over in half. And you knew that if you were not the first one to be called, you were the next one to be called. So you just kind of sat silently on the couch in the family room. So you'd go into the workroom and they would slide that door closed behind you. Oh. It was hard. It was the hardest thing to hear those words. And it really wasn't until I grew up that I began to understand how hard it was for them to say those words. You know, in the moment when you're a kid, you just think, man, my mom and dad want to punish me. But that was a really courageous thing for them to do, because as much as I didn't want to hear it, they didn't want to say it. You see, but they loved the truth more than they hated the discomfort. And so they were courageous enough to tell me what was real, because if they didn't tell me what was real, I would continue a behavior that was destructive. So they told me the uncomfortable truth, actually, in order to give me life. And it was so scary, I listened to them. Right, you straighten your way right out. You know, they never said, we're angry with you. What did they say? Just disappointed. Cuts to the heart. But it really had transformative power. Sometimes when truth hurts, it has to hurt in order to transform us and to change us to be something different. And do you think Jesus is comfortable when he has to tell us a truth that's not fun? Man, I don't think he likes it any more than we like it. But Jesus has the courage to say it anyways, because that's how much he loves you. That's how much he wants you to have life. That's how much he wants for you to receive, be able to receive the blessings that he wants to give. But it's always a truth that crucifies him. And it's always a truth that crucifies us as well, right? It crucifies our comfort. Whew. It crucifies our pride. Sometimes even in the moment, it might crucify something of a relationship. It might do some temporary damage to that. And it takes, you know, delicacy and prudence to know how to stretch those bonds of relationship. But I tell you what, truth always gives you life. To be a prophet will always give you the inheritance that you were meant for. Man, this is what we heard in the psalm. You know, the priest prays this psalm every week. I don't know if it's on Monday night or Tuesday night of night prayer. We heard a part of it tonight, Psalm 16, such a beautiful psalm. O Lord, my allotted portion and my cup, you it is who hold fast my lot. I set the Lord ever before me, and with him at my right hand I shall not be disturbed. Therefore my heart is glad and my soul rejoices, and my body too abides in confidence, because you will not abandon my soul to the nether world, nor will you suffer your faithful one to undergo corruption. You will show me the path of life. The fullness of joy is in your presence. the delights at your right hand forever. Those two are the words of a prophet. Those are part of the joys of saving truth to us. But it's always a challenge, because where you and I, where we are left, where that invitation happens, is always firstly in our own souls. Do you and I have the courage to speak the voice of the prophet to our own hearts and to examine the things that the world tells us bring us happiness? And you know, there are basically four. These are the only four things that the prophets of the Old Testament ever challenged in God's people: the altar to the god of wealth, the altar to the god of pleasure, the altar to the god of power, and the altar to the god of honor. Every way that you and I ever begin to bring misery into our lives because we worship falsely is probably because we're worshiping one of these things. We worship money, wealth, pleasure, power, or honor. You know how we all know that's true? Because those are the only four things that the world ever tells you is going to make you happy. You want to be happy? Make a lot of money. That'll make you happy. Whatever you got to get, just get all of it. That's what's going to satisfy you, right? And so we worship that God, we worship that altar, even to the point of self-destruction. And it's never going to satisfy us, right? Our pleasure in food and drink, drugs, sex, pornography, all of the above. You want to be happy? Get as much pleasure as you can get, because that's what's going to satisfy you. And we know it doesn't, right? But we worship that altar, and we even do so to the point of injuring ourselves. And Jesus says a truth that scorches us and it hurts, but he says it because he wants to save us from it. Or it might be power. You want to be happy? Have a lot of power. Whatever influence you can wield over people, right? And how many people do we see try and climb that ladder of power in order to think that control over all things around us is what satisfies the heart, but it doesn't? Or maybe it's honor. Maybe what it is that I really seek is like recognition, you know, and appreciation. Because as long as I'm recognized by other people, and if I'm really loved and appreciated by other people, that's what's going to make me happy, and it doesn't. And we go after it. And that's not just us in the abstract, that's each of us in the concrete, me first of all. Like, we're all asked by God to look at those areas and to say, man, where is my altar of false worship? You know, is it wealth? Is it like material goods? You know, is it pleasure? Is it power and control? Is it honor? Is it recognition? Is it appreciation? Are these the things that are preventing me from living a life of true joy and happiness that God wants? To be a prophet to your own soul is a very courageous thing, and it's a place that we all start. It's the office that Jesus gives you as Christian, and he gives that to you not to scorch you, but he gives that to you to give you life. Let's even thank Jesus for the hard truths that bring us saving grace. Because it's just a momentary pain, but God promises that it's an eternal glory.